Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so grateful, as always, that you all are here so we can dive into these teachings and thus strengthen them in our minds. We'll do our meditation, but if you'd like to just find your place in the book as we settle in, we're reading part 19 tonight in the Manual for Teachers. It's called What is Justice? I'll share the page numbers after our meditation. All right. I'm just going to make sure we're all muted. And if you'd like, allowing your eyes to close. And turning attention within. Whatever your mind may be doing, whatever places it may be going, just inviting your mind to sink deeper. Dropping beneath the surface level thoughts. Dropping deeper into the center of our being. And coming to rest, even if just for a moment, or even if it's just our intention to rest in this quiet, still space that we all share. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And I invite you just to take three deep breaths at your own pace. Really lengthening that exhalation. You can easily do so by pursing your lips as if you're blowing out into a pinwheel. Three deep breaths and just dropping into this moment. Our perception of right here, right now. And allowing your eyes to open. So nice to see all of you this evening. Those of you with cameras on, cameras off, and on the phone, welcome. So tonight we're reading the Manual for Teachers, Part 19, What is Justice? It is page 1627 in the CE. And in the FIP edition, at least in my printing, it is page 49 in the back in the Manual for Teachers. All right, so let's go ahead and dive in. What is justice? Justice is the divine correction for injustice. Injustice is the basis for all the judgments of the world. Justice corrects the interpretations to which injustice gives rise and cancels them out. Neither justice nor injustice exists in heaven, for error is impossible and correction meaningless. In this world, however, forgiveness depends on justice, since all attack can only be unjust. Justice is the Holy Spirit's verdict upon the world. Except in his judgment, justice is impossible, for no one in the world is capable of making only just interpretations and laying all injustices aside. If God's Son were fairly judged, there would be no need for salvation. The thought of separation would have been forever inconceivable. And there we shall pause. After the first sentence, justice is the divine correction for injustice, there's a footnote in the CE, the purple cover book, and I just want to read it because it's helpful. It says the term justice is being used in this section in the same sense as in chapter 25 in the text. It means giving the Son of God what he really deserves. Because he is sinless, what he deserves is forgiveness, never attack. Real justice then is not punishment, but forgiveness. I like that. So real justice is forgiveness, not punishment, not condemnation, not attack. So in this paragraph, injustice, attack, lack of forgiveness is the basis for all the judgments of the world. Justice corrects the interpretation to which injustice gives rise and cancels them out. Justice, so if justice is giving another what they truly deserve, which is forgiveness, seeing past error, canceling it out, I think immediately of that prayer that we always say from page 90, our famous page 90 prayer that Paula's voice will always be in my head saying, page 90, which is on page. I don't believe it. I have it on my wall and I can't find it at the moment. Here it is. 229. Sorry. 229. I wasn't looking in the 229. It's the, there's a part, it's that I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace prayer. And it says the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of our wrong decision. I've always loved that line. The Holy Spirit will undo the consequences of our wrong decision. That makes me think of justice. Justice is the Holy Spirit's verdict upon the world. It is forgiveness. It is looking past the error. That's the Holy Spirit undoing the consequences of our wrong decisions. Except in his judgment, justice is impossible. So we need the Holy Spirit for, Corinne can't give justice. It's the Holy Spirit by which all of this occurs. No one in the world, this is because no one in the world, as it says, is capable of making only just interpretations and laying all injustices aside. And when the Course says, as we've said many times, when it says no one, always, forever, it means it. So it says, no one in the world is capable of making only just interpretations and laying all injustices aside. When we do this, it's the Holy Spirit working through us. So, yeah, forgiveness, justice is the Holy Spirit's verdict upon the world. What a relief. And how beautiful is that? Any comments or questions so far or insights? We can go ahead and read paragraph number 2. Justice, like its opposite, is an interpretation. It is, however, the one interpretation that leads to truth. This becomes possible because, while it is not true in itself, justice includes nothing that opposes truth. There is no inherent conflict between justice and truth. For one, is but the first small step in the direction of the other. The path becomes quite different as one goes along. Nor could all the magnificence, the grandeur of the scene, and the enormous opening vistas that rise to meet one as he travels on be foretold from the outset. Yet even these, whose splendor reaches indescribable heights as one proceeds, fall short indeed of all that finally awaits one when the pathway ceases and time ends with it. But somewhere one must start. Justice is the beginning. So this is clearly saying that whether it's justice or injustice, these are both interpretations. So giving another what they deserve, which is forgiveness, which is seeing past the appearances, just like judgment, are both interpretations. They're not needed in truth. But here, justice is the only interpretation that leads to truth. So extending forgiveness is going to be the only interpretation that leads to the truth. I love how it says, there's no inherent conflict between justice and the truth. One is but the first small step in the direction of the other. And this is beautiful how it goes on to say in the latter part of this paragraph, it's equating this to the path of climbing, going upwards, the magnificence, the grandeur of the scene, the opening vistas, reaching indescribable, yet even these whose splendor reaches indescribable heights as one proceeds, fall short indeed of all that finally awaits when the pathway ceases and time ends with it. And we start with justice. That's how the path begins, with justice, with forgiveness. Now it's easier said than done, right? I feel like I always want to say like, okay, now let's be real. Like that sounds wonderful and lovely, and it is true. And then we find ourselves where we are with all of our experiences of our lives, challenging relationships, situations that we're involved in that are triggering us in one way or another. And here again, as we always say, the way through is always through with the Holy Spirit, because if the Holy Spirit is the only one that can bestow this verdict of justice, if we can't do that, we need the Holy Spirit through all of it. And it means that we're also practicing all the things that the Course talks about, like the happy learner cannot feel guilty about learning. It just brings to mind to me the importance of allowing us to be where we are and always talking to the Holy Spirit. My friend Danielle and I always refer, we just always say, are you talking to Jesus? Are you talking to Jesus about it? Or are you talking to the Holy Spirit? Meaning that inner dialogue that you might have with Jesus or the Holy Spirit, that is you turning to them. That is you still holding them in mind as we, you know, move forward through whatever situation it is that we find ourselves in. Anybody have questions, examples? Paula, I see your kitty.
I think Eckhart Tolle has a had his hand up. Jason.
Oh, thank you. Jason, did you have your hand up? I don't see you.
Actually, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, Eckhart, no. There you are. Okay.
Yeah, that's not me.
Okay, gotcha. I made the connection now when Paula referred to you as Eckhart Tolle. Oh, very good. Anyone? John. Hi, John.
I'd just like to say, I know when it comes to justice that we find ourselves more guilty a lot of times than we do others, or harder to forgive ourselves sometimes than it is to forgive others. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when we do something that we feel bad about, we hold on to it a long time. And it's hard to let it go sometimes, you know, because it just sinks in so deeply. And that guilt is just an overbearing weight.
Yeah, it is. And that's, John, I go back again to the page 90, page 229 prayer The Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision. And if we can keep each time we notice that guilt, each time we notice that, you know, lack of forgiveness toward ourselves, if we can remind ourselves that the Holy Spirit will undo the consequences. What does it say in one of the cameo essays, which is pulling from Helen's notes, every hurt you've ever expressed has been canceled. Like let all of us let that sink in for a minute. Every hurt and hate you've ever expressed has been canceled. Like what good news? What good news is that? And so if we can just step into that, even if it's just for a moment, and release that burden of guilt that we're carrying on our shoulders, that guilt that we carry, not forgiving ourselves, doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the other person even. It doesn't help anyone involved. And so that, again, it only takes that tiny bit of willingness. We don't have to get it perfect. That burden of guilt can feel really too much to bear, but we don't have to carry it alone. And we can be talking to the Holy Spirit, who will undo the consequences of our wrong decision. Another thing that I just like to think about, and I was speaking with somebody offline about this, but you know, the things that we beat ourselves up for, would we beat ourselves? Would it be if our child or just any child, you know, would we be as hard on them as we are on ourselves? And no, I don't think we would be. And so it can be really helpful also in our self-forgiveness process to get our own baby picture and to connect with the eyes of that photo as you and that innocence that's there, and really connect with that despite, again, whatever it is that we feel that we've done or that has transpired, that can be something helpful as well. So I see a comment, but I just saw your hand, Michelle. You go. You thank you, John. Thank you for sharing, Michelle.
Hi. I completely relate to everything that you said, and I actually used that prayer today, and I had to repeat it a few times, and just kept reminding myself the Holy Spirit, you know, undoes the consequences, mm-hmm. And I agree that it is so much harder to forgive ourselves. Mm-hmm. For sure. And then, yeah, picturing ourselves as that child, or, you know, just picturing a baby or a puppy, or just reminding yourself that, you know what, if this was my sister, if this was so-and-so, this is not how I would be thinking about them. Mm-hmm. But my question was, just with regards to that prayer, that page 90, sometimes I know where I feel I've made the mistake, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just know that, okay, I was okay, and now I'm off. So it's, we can still just, because the Holy Spirit knows where I went off, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. we can use the prayer, even if we're not exactly sure. Sometimes too, I'm not really sure if I've made a mistake or if it's just my guilt.
Michelle, great, great point. And I feel like the prayer is meant for when we don't, I mean, maybe, I don't know what it's meant for, whether we know or whether we don't, but it's worded as if we don't know. Okay. I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace. Like that's all we need to know. Like, am I at peace or am I not at peace? And that question is usually pretty easy for us to answer. So I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace. We don't know where we decided wrongly, but the prayer is, in a sense, I almost want to open it up to page 229. Let me just skip back here really quick. I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself, but I can also decide otherwise. So this is kind of working us backwards to being the decision maker. I will to decide otherwise. This is worded a little bit differently than the FIP. I will to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. So in other words, we're now declaring that we want peace. We want to decide otherwise. We want to make another decision. I do not feel guilty because the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him. I will to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. And there's the key. is putting the Holy Spirit back in charge. We can't do that correction, but the Holy Spirit, we can allow him to decide for God for me. So that was the first part of your question, like whether or not we have to know, you know, where we went wrong. And I don't think we do, but there was another part of your question. It's escaping me now. Do you remember what it was?
I think I was saying that sometimes I'm not sure if I did make a mistake, but so I'm like, okay, so am I feeling guilty? And so I think I made a mistake. Was that a mistake? And I'm not really sure.
Right.
Sometimes right. Because of the guilt.
But are guilt you aware?
Guilt kind of gets you.
Right.
You know, well, and then I'm like, was that a mistake? Like, you know, I felt okay when I said that, or I did, you know, and I'm just, maybe I'm second guessing later and I'm feeling a little bit guilty and it's like, okay, but I'm not really sure that that was a mistake. So right. I guess it's still the same thing that you can still go to the Holy Spirit and say, okay, I'm not really sure where I went wrong or if I went wrong, but I'm not at peace.
Absolutely. You got it. I feel like you just answered it with, you can still use this because even that the Course says somewhere that we will be guided to do things that are quite, I can't remember if it says surprising or startling, like you might be guided to say things that are quite, yeah, startling or surprising. I don't remember the exact wording. And I think it's a natural, at least I have that tendency to go back and then question myself and second guess, like you're saying. And so we could look at that as where we lost the peace, you know, right there is that lack of trust that, oh, maybe it wasn't guidance. Maybe I did do a mistake. So you're absolutely right that no matter what, even if we're not sure that our error was the first thing that we did, or if it was the second guessing, we can still use that prayer for correction. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, Eric wrote, that's a good prayer, but too long. I will forgive this and it will disappear. That's perfect. Cheryl posted, I feel lost with what this chapter is saying. So this is just really just answering the question, what is justice? That's all this section is about. It's only five short paragraphs. So that's what we are learning about. Any other comments or questions so far?
Yeah, Corinne.
Yes.
Eric's suggestion that this is a good prayer, but it's too long. I find it's just, I've got it memorized. Mm-hmm. So it's just long enough to get me off the subject. Whatever it is that was disturbing my peace, if I say that prayer to myself, by the time I'm done with it, it's got to take about 17 seconds to say that prayer. I'm off it.
Right.
So I think that's deliberate. Whatever it takes to shift the perception.
A long time ago, I wrote a blog post about that prayer because I feel the same way, Paula. It's been a go-to, you know, prayer in the Course for me for forever. And I equated it. I used to watch a show called Ren and Stimpy. I don't know if anybody remembers that like kind of sick and twisted cartoon. And there was a segment of the cartoon where Stimpy is like, there's a big red button. And if he presses it, it's going to end the universe, but he can't resist the big red button. So I equate that prayer to like the big red reset button. Like it resets my, my little universe. Yes. Here and starts me over. Yeah. Aww, I heard you, kitty.
I read something today that just seemed, Jesus says that when we see one brother as innocent or just, we will generalize this to others. And when I think about that, that's the truth. That really helps. Just by forgiving one, you literally forgive all.
And it's like that.
Or at least for the moment.
That interlocking chain of miracles, that interlocking chain of forgiveness, that just by doing that, just to build on what you're saying, just by doing that, you know, seeing that innocence and that truth in one person and that transfer, I see that as like that start of the interlocking chain of forgiveness, of miracles. It's beautiful. Hi, Lorraine. Thanks, Paula.
I just wanted to comment on what Paula just said, because something that I found useful is sometimes if I really just feel like I just keep trying to forgive a certain situation or a person, and I'm just like stuck. I'm just maybe not really willing yet to see it another way. I just decide to focus on something else. There's always something, some grievance that I'm have about, you know, even things I would think are little, right? But they're all the same. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm just have a grievance that like my shirt is itchy or something, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. Or just somebody cut me off on the highway, or, you know, something's lower hanging fruit, and just like really focus on that. And that really brings me to a more peaceful place.
Mm-hmm. Mm, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for that, Lorraine. That's helpful to hear.
Hey, Corinne?
Yes.
Can I comment on this this section, this justice versus injustice?
Please.
Okay. So the way I see it is that, first, forgiveness for me means, it's not the traditional form, but what it means is replacing illusion with truth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then if I'm in my ego, I'm automatically in a state of injustice in my mind. Mm-hmm. Because I'm perceiving myself as a body under attack. And so the main thing for this section for me is simply this, is when I'm in my right mind, I see egoic behavior in other people as a call for love instead of a personal attack on me. Mm-hmm. That makes all the difference, because if I see it as an attack on me and I react by counterattacking, then all I'm doing is perpetuating the illusion and the guilt in both of us by doing so. So that's injustice, is reactionary, angry response. Whereas justice would be seeing an attack by someone else as a call for love, and then responding with the Holy Spirit in my mind, rather than reacting coming from the ego, because the Holy Spirit will always provide me with a response that includes justice. So it's just shifting my mind and my perception from wrong-mindedness to right-mindedness through the Holy Spirit, and not taking things personally. That's pretty much it for me.
Scott, you just described that beautifully. This whole section you just captured in your words. So thank you so much for that. And I hope for anybody who, Cheryl or anybody else who is feeling lost with what this chapter is saying so far, that Scott just summed it up so nicely for us. Thank you, Scott. Oh, wonderful. Well, let's keep reading on that note. This is a short section, so we're on paragraph 3 already. All concepts of your brothers and yourself, all fears of future states, and all concerns about the past stem from injustice. Here is the lens, which, held before the body's eyes, distorts perception and brings witness of the distorted world back to the mind that made the lens and holds it very dear. Selectively and arbitrarily is every concept of the world built up in just this way. Quote unquote, sins are perceived and justified by careful selectivity, in which all thought of wholeness must be lost. Forgiveness has no place in such a scheme, for not one quote sin but seems forever true. So again, here we are on the not right-minded side with injustice. All the concepts that we hold of one another, all of our fears of the future, all concerns about the past stem from injustice or wrong-mindedness. I'm so grateful, Scott, that you brought up the right-mindedness and wrong-mindedness terms. This injustice is like the ego's lens, which when we look through it, it's distorting everything, bringing witnesses of this distorted world back to the mind that made the lens. And this is how we just, you know, build up again our grievances, quote unquote, sins, And there's no room for true forgiveness in this closed ego loop because, again, these sins seem forever true. But let's get on to the good news in paragraph number 4. Salvation is God's justice. It restores to your awareness the wholeness of the fragments you perceive as broken off. And it is this that overcomes the fear of death. For separate fragments must decay and die, but wholeness is immortal. It remains forever and forever like its creator, being one with him. God's judgment is his justice. On to this, a judgment wholly lacking in condemnation, an evaluation based entirely on love. So onto this, you have projected your own injustice, giving God the lens of warped perception through which you look. Now it belongs to him and not to you. You are afraid of him and do not see you hate and fear your capital S self as enemy. Where my mind went as we were reading this is that when we think about anything, I'm going to go with what John said before about just self-forgiveness and what we hold, the burden of guilt that we carry ourselves. It says God's judgment is his justice. And what came up for me immediately with reading that is that that is now, that is right now, that God's judgment is his justice, is his forgiveness, is his upholding the truth, only, you know, knowing and seeing the truth. As Scott said before, forgiveness is replacing illusion with truth. So God's judgment is that truth. And that is right now. That's not later. That's right now. We might not perceive it right now, again, because of our own blocks, but that is right now. And so if we feel that we are carrying a burden of guilt in any way, shape, or form, this could be a helpful thought to remind ourselves of, that his justice, his judgment applies right now. And it is that you are wholly innocent and forever his son. What we've done, it says, so onto this capital J judgment, which is the love of God, which wholly lacks in condemnation. There's no condemnation in God's judgment in any form, no matter what. It's an evaluation based entirely on love. It says you have projected your own injustice. So we have projected our own injustice, our own judgment, our own lack of forgiveness onto God. And so we become afraid of God. We even hear, I mean, I still notice it in myself. When I think of God's judgment, I still get a little, I can still sense in my mind a little like, ooh, like an initial, like, oh, that sounds really scary. And so what, you know, that's pretty deep conditioning. And if anybody, I saw some heads in agreement, if we notice this, that's an important thing to catch and to to bring to Holy Spirit. Because that feeling of like, oh, God's judgment and feeling afraid of that, that right there is our projection of our injustice onto God. God only loves, as it says, it lacks wholly lacks condemnation. God's judgment is an evaluation based entirely on love. We project our own judgment, injustice, et cetera. And now we're afraid of God. And so why do we want to go towards something that we think is fearful and going to strike us? So that is something, again, that we need to look at, to be willing to look at with Holy Spirit. Are there any comments or questions, anything bubbling up for anybody so far to share? Cheryl.
I just wanted to say that Paula's cat was hilarious while you were reading.
I missed it. I didn't see it.
You'll have to watch it on the replay.
Okay.
She wants to be a part of the group.
She knows what the good vibes are. That's what it is. Oh my goodness. Anyone else?
I'm not sure if I'm through.
I'm hearing somebody. Yes, who's that?
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Jim. I wasn't sure if I got through or not.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. What we're talking about today is so much what I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks. I grew up Catholic, and I always remember my first Holy Communion where our church had burnt down. And so our first confession was in the middle of the auditorium. And I went through this, bless me, Father, for I have sinned kind of thing. And when I was about to list my sins, I said to the priest, do I have to remember all my sins? And the priest said, yes. And in my mind, I thought, I don't believe this. As a child, I thought, God, I don't think God is out to get me. Mm-hmm. And it's always in the background of my mind as I've gone through my life. When I started studying the Course a few years ago, now, especially lately, what I see is coming up is that whether I realize it or not, I'm wondering if I'm understanding it correctly. Whether I realize it, even though I have this idea of a merciful God throughout my life, whether I realize it or not, when I lash out either silently or verbally at somebody or at myself, it's actually because I'm feeling guilty because I think I separated from God. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mm. That's the deepest. Yeah, that's absolutely okay. Going on. It might not feel like totally relatable, but we believe that we've separated and we feel guilty about it. And so we're afraid God is going to, get us for it and punish us for it. And so that lashing out can be from that. It can be, because of our own, our brothers can remind us unconsciously that we think that we've separated, and that can be why we lash out. But you're absolutely hitting on something very important. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. It's funny just hearing you share about your experience with confession, because I was also raised Catholic, but not, I went through, some of the CCD and communion, and I can remember, I didn't have to keep going though, because my parents weren't super strict. And I can remember as a child, I was probably, I don't even know, fifth grade, maybe it was fourth, fifth grade. I was young. And I remember going to confession, saying, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It had been at least a year, I think, since I had been there. And, this is like, I'm a little fourth or fifth grader. And I remember feeling so guilty for not going sooner, like for the length of time from which I did not confess my sins. And so it's interesting how, interestingly, I don't feel myself now blaming that priest for any increase of guilt, because the guilt is already there, but right. There's somebody who's showing up to like play, the role where I could blame, but in essence, the guilt is already in my mind. And that's, where we need to do the work versus blaming the other. So Jim, you just brought that memory to mind for me. So thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Hadn't thought of that in some time. Michelle.
I can completely relate as well. I was seven when I did my first confession and the whole communion thing, and went several years because my parents were both devout Catholics. So in any case, it was just a comment that you had made, and in line with Jim's question as well about the so the separation belief, and that's the reason why we feel the guilt. And so sometimes what I find myself doing with that then, because we have like childhood memories and things that we kind of go back to and trying to heal those things as well. Mm-hmm. But I found myself kind of doing that, was saying, well, okay, but that was actually, the guilt was already there. And mm-hmm. This was actually showing me that, even though I was only 4 or 5 when that happened. Is that, that's kind of, I don't know.
100%. We don't come, you know, we like to think that, and this, I don't know, for those of us who are newer to the course, this might sound kind of shocking, but like, we like to think that babies are totally innocent, you know, and none of us would have come here in the first place if we didn't choose to and have that guilt in our minds already. So we already, you know, made the choice for separation and then came here. So we're coming in with that guilt already. And so you're absolutely spot on, Michelle, that those early experiences, you know, we can see as, you know, showing us the guilt that's already in our minds, because we wouldn't, if we truly knew our innocence. And again, there's degrees. Like, yes, children come in with much cleaner slates than adults. But I do think that, I mean, what I just said about what the course is teaching still, you know, applies, that we're still coming in with the guilt already. But of course, children have less conditioning, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. We pick it up as we grow. But yes. So yeah, thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's kind of liberating, isn't it? With thinking about, you know, the things that happen. See, this is a sticking point for some people. I can think of somebody in my own family who has a really hard time with the course because of this idea that how can something happen and I have anything to do with it? You know, like, aren't there things that just randomly happen to me? And as the course says, what's happening out there is the result of not only my miscreations, but a collective, you know, happening as well. By me taking responsibility, even if I don't understand how, like, even if it was a really crappy situation and somebody did something terrible, yes, that person is responsible. And at the same time, I find a sense of empowerment by saying to myself, for me, and again, I'm careful to not apply this to another. This is just something that, you know, I will do for myself and perhaps others do too, but that, like, this was somehow part of my dream. Like, somehow I'm the dreamer of this dream. Don't know how, don't understand how I could be responsible in some way to be the dreamer of this dream. But by those little words and that little willingness to be responsible for what I see, that's where I feel empowered. Then I can do something about it. Then I can choose again. If I'm a passive victim always, then, like, that sucks. And there's not, you know, much that I might feel that I can do to heal on a really deep, deep level. Of course, there still are things that one can do, but that's just what has always worked for me with being a course student and being willing to take that radical responsibility. Thank you. John.
Yeah, I just have to tell a silly story. Everybody talking about their confessor and stuff. And I remember when we were about 12 years old, me and my best friend, Bill, I had to go to a Catholic church, you know, but we weren't baptized Catholic or anything. And he came with me one time. And after church, you know, you go to the confession and stuff. And everybody had pretty much left because we were walking around the church, checking stuff out and stuff. He's like, "You ever go in there?" And I was like, "No."
He's like, "Wait, he said what?" He said what?
He asked, "Did you ever go in there to the confessor?" You know, and I said, "No." And he's like, "I want to go in." I was like, "Oh, go ahead. I don't care." So he goes in. And when the priest opened the little door, you know, he looked over. He's like, "You got any toilet paper on that side?" And he ran out.
Oh, no.
We ran out of the church.
Oh, just my goodness.
Talking about that reminded me of that.
That's so funny, John. That's really funny. Thank you. Thank you for sharing, for the laugh. That's great. I can just picture it. That's awesome. Let's go ahead and read the final paragraph here, and we should probably still have time to just keep chatting. Pray for God, so this is paragraph 5, pray for God's justice and do not confuse his mercy with your own insanity. Perception can make whatever picture the mind desires to see. Oof, That's my oof, not in the course. Perception can make whatever picture the mind desires to see. Remember this. In this lies either heaven or hell, as you elect. God's justice points to heaven just because it is entirely impartial. It accepts all evidence that is brought before it, omitting nothing and assessing nothing as separate and apart from all the rest. From this one standpoint does it judge, and this alone. Here, all attack and condemnation become meaningless and indefensible. Perception rests. The mind is still, and light returns again. Vision is now restored. What had been lost has now been found. The peace of God descends on all the world, and we can see. And we can see. Whew. That first sentence that I underlined where I gave the oof. Perception can make whatever picture the mind desires to see. That's a big statement. It says, remember this, in this lies either heaven or hell as you elect. It goes on to say that God's justice is entirely impartial. It accepts all evidence that is brought before it, omitting nothing and assessing nothing as separate from it from all the rest. So in other words, it can be tempting to think, okay, God wholly forgives. There's no condemnation. It's only wholly loving. But I have to hold myself apart from that because of X, Y, or Z. And this is clearly saying that nothing is omitted, that nothing that we think that we've done is held separate from God's justice. And instead, all of it is seen truly. The truth is true. Nothing else is true. That truth is upheld. And it is in this space, no matter what we think we have done or another, all attack and condemnation become meaningless and indefensible, not just meaningless, but indefensible. And I have to tell you, I think this is my new favorite sentence. I feel like I haven't read it before. Perception rests. The mind is still, and light returns again. That's one of those sentences that I just want to drop into and really just feel and hang out in, this idea of perception resting, of my perception resting. It kind of gives that idea that like my perception is always busy, always creating, always concocting stories and judgments and busy. But here in God's judgment, perception rests. The mind is still and light returns again. I love that. And that's when vision is restored. Wow. We have like 9 minutes left, and I'm wondering what is on your mind. If anything is coming up for anyone. Melanie.
I love what you said. I don't have it exactly as you said it, but something that you said, if I take radical responsibility, then I can change it. If I blame, quote, them, then I can't change anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that is, I just really love that thought. Because sometimes I think, especially in my past, if something was horrific, you know, even though I forgave, quote, I thought I forgave, but it still keeps coming up. So I really haven't forgiven them. But if I forget about the forgiven in a way, if I take responsibility, even if it's like that I was born to come into this life to experience this horrificness, then I can change it. That's the part I'm a little questioning. I can change what?
I can heal. Then I can allow my perception to be changed. Then I can have experiences that show me that I'm the dreamer of this dream, that there's really something, you know, beyond this. So taking that radical responsibility puts me in a place of empowerment versus being a passive recipient. And I'd much rather be in that place of empowerment. So, because that place of empowerment is making me feel like I have the agency, I have the ability to choose again.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's a helpful thought for me too. It's always good to hear again. Thank you, Melanie. Oh.
I'd like to comment. Yeah, I know Reverend Celeste.
Yes.
Corinne,
of course.
I listened to her today on Speakeasy, which is another A Course in Miracles group. And we were going through the word mother, and hers was, we're on T now. And she was talking about truth. Excuse me. And that's exactly what she had talked about, how she couldn't change anything out there, but she could change something within her and create that truth. It was what it really was out there. You know, and like it says in here, how in this lies either heaven or hell. And I actually said that to my daughter the other day, because she came over the day after Thanksgiving with her husband. And I noticed she had a new tattoo on her arm. And it's like, oh, what's that? I don't even remember what the picture was that was behind it. Sorry. But she had a like a ribbon in there. And it actually said, fuck politeness. And I was like, what? It's like, why would you put that on your body? You know? And I understand. I mean, she explained to me how, where with, especially with women, how women could be taken advantage of. And she's like, explained to me, I think she's watching too many true crime mysteries or something, but how, you know, the guy that's got like a broken arm and needs help getting his groceries into his trunk or something, and then you go over there to help him being polite, and he knocks you on the head and throws you in the trunk. And I'm thinking, well, how often does that really happen? You know, I mean, it does happen occasionally. There are serial killers out there. And I understand that women are more vulnerable and have to be aware. So we kind of went back and forth a little bit. You know, I tried to convince her that no, courtesy is the nice thing to do. And she's like, yeah, but you can't be too courteous. You can't be too polite because people will take advantage of you. And I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. But this is telling us to do the opposite. It really is. And we have to see beauty in the world. We have to see kindness in the world. And so, you know, I didn't try to over convince her, because it's like, okay, I get your point, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, it's meaningful for her, and meaningful enough that she had it tattooed. And so then, yeah, that was what she's getting out of that is like her perfect learning, you know, like that's where she is. And that's where, that's what's speaking to her. And, so good for her that feels so empowering, you know, for her, that's part of her healing. You know, that tattoo, that saying. And so it's funny, John, thank you for, for sharing. And it makes me think too, just how, I mean, we do have like a culture of nice where we're expected to, you know, be nice. And it's something I think to overcome, because, and I'm speaking for myself, I absolutely have people pleasing tendencies in me. I've been working for a long time, very hard, you know, with healing that. And so being able to be like a Mrs. Albert in the course, like the crone archetype, which I'm reading another book about the Black Madonna, and Reverend Celeste is the teacher that John and I were taking a Black Madonna class with. The book that I'm reading was speaking about the crone being like the wisdom part of one's psyche, and saying what one is guided to say and letting the pieces fall where they may, meaning not having the over concern of, oh my gosh, did I upset somebody? You know, and that tendency that we might do with overthinking and doubting ourselves, instead just speaking as directed. And that might not always come across as, you know, quote unquote, being nice and pleasing. So just a few thoughts anyway. Thank you. Thank you, John. Michelle, then Steve, then Paula.
I I'm not sure if I remember what I was going to say, but I'm just going back to what Melanie had said and what you had said earlier about taking responsibility. And so it just made me think about, you know, that the Course says that there really is only one problem, and that is that we believe that we've separated and we seem to make things very complicated. And I was sort of feeling a sense of freedom as I was sort of thinking back to, like, you know, a childhood memory and thinking like, okay, yes, that happened, but that was showing me my belief in separation. And so now it's like sort of dropping all the details and just going to the Holy Spirit with sort of that, the root, the one problem, and then letting the Holy Spirit undo that. And there is a sense of freedom in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
If we can get there, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of us might be getting there through the help of like traditional therapy by looking like, you know, I shared in our, and my goodness, there's been, I'm not going to go on a big digression, but I shared in the From Anxiety to Love Masterclass Q&A that I have been really benefiting from a trauma treatment called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, for some childhood trauma. And the connections and the things that, I mean, the Holy Spirit is working so powerfully for me through this modality. And it's literally forgiveness in action. Like, it's through a modality that's not A Course in Miracles, but I am feeling the charge of these childhood traumatic situations lift. And I can think about them now and think that, like, I was a happy kid, like, and think that instead of the other thoughts that I used to have. And it's been through this modality that's not A Course in Miracles. And yet the Holy Spirit and Jesus are right there while we're doing, you know, the EMDR, the eye movement sessions. It's been incredible. So I had to throw that out there too, because Holy Spirit will use anything and meet us where we are. So thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Steve, then Paula, then Chris.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Where are you?
Oh, all right, cool. I'm on the phone. I'm out in the middle of nowhere looking at the stars.
Oh, yay. Oh, hi, Steve. Yay.
Hello, hello. Boy, you nailed the last comment you made. It was exactly what was on my mind, is that having that open dialogue with Jesus and the Holy Spirit. I mean, what a wonderful reminder. Thank you for that. You mentioned that earlier, and you know, to be able to just, you know, to bring that into the present moment, you know, to bring Jesus in and say, here, you know, please sit down, you know, let's, you know, this is what's going on, you know, and it's such a comforting feeling. And when we talked about justice and getting what we deserve, you know, when it was worded that in such way that you know, that's, you know, what we get is, you know, the beautiful part of everything, you know, what a beautiful reminder for as well. So thank you for all that.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for your words, and thank you for I'm hearing my echo, but Paula, I'm just muting you. I'm just going to be quiet because of the echo. Oh, thank you. Okay, yes, it was yours. I was going to say thank you, and I don't remember now what I lost it. I'm sorry. The echo is too trippy. Whatever I was going to say just completely went out of my head. Thank you, Steve. Paula, you were next. Sorry to have muted you.
I just wanted to respond to John. I loved the response that he just stuck to kindness in his response to his daughter, rather than reacting about that tattoo. He just reminded her that kindness is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, she will remember that. Mm-hmm. It might not seem that way, but my mother always was like that. My mother would always respond in that way. And when I was a kid, I did, what the hell's wrong with, you know, like I always wanted to disregard what she had to say, but I never did. And it stuck with me. So good for you, John.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you for that. Chris. Hi.
Hi there. I've been attending the last couple of weeks, and I just wanted to say hi. Thank you for your book. And hello, everybody. Hello, Jason, who I know. And that's it. Just, I'm grateful for the group.
Awesome. So thank you so much for coming on to say hello.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm grateful that you're here. Thank you for your kind words and your presence. We feel it. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Let me just make sure if anybody, if anybody wants any more info on EMDR, you can just email me. And I think I see one other chat from Eric. It helps to remember that when it appears that someone else has started the argument that the law of perception is that you must attack yourself first before anyone else can attack you. You can only receive what you have given. Helpful reminder, Eric. Thank you. All right. Any final comments or questions before we wrap up for the evening? All good? All right. Thank you, everyone. And I will see you all next week. Much love. Thank you for your comments, your participation, and your presence. I love you all. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.